Hey, I'm Brian Lucci, and this is the official One Chicago podcast. I think you guys can tell that we have a whole lot of fun making Chicago PD. But I gotta tell you, last night's episode 1311, titled On the Way, well, that's the most fun that we've had in a long, long time. We got to visit the candy shop, borrow a custom Lamborghini, and do some amazing car tricks. And we did a takeover of the downtown streets of Chicago, which looked so real that the actual coppers showed up.
I remember that, boy. They pulled out, and I felt like I was back in Harvey, and the Jump Out Boys was in the pocket. I was like, oh, snap. What's going on for real? But it was hilarious.
And the best part of all of this for me, doing it with my guy, LaRoyce Hawkins, a.k.a. Kevin Atwater. He's had two great episodes this season. This one, On the Way, 1311, and Miami, back at 1305. And that arc has led to a little surprise. If you know, you know. And if you don't, I'm not going to spoil it here. Go back and watch the last few minutes of last night's episode. Because things are changing for our man Atwater.
No, I'm very excited. Dude, but I'm also nervous.
Oh, you got to be nervous.
I'm nervous, Looch. I ain't going to hold you.
When we come back, LaRoyce Hawkins talks about episode 1311. How he's grown as a character, and how things are only getting better. Don't go anywhere. So here we are, 13 seasons in.
Yeah.
I mean, the podcast, I don't know how many that we've aired so far, but I'm telling you, bro, I'm like, now they take these smidgets and they go back and forth. It's been fun.
Yeah.
You know, they got a couple people that I can't say right now that I'm about to do. But here we go.
Okay.
What's been your favorite character moment this season for Atwater and why?
Man, I liked a lot of moments. I liked a lot of moments on the way. I'm very, very grateful for Gwen and the team, Stefan specifically. I call him Stefan when he gets in his actor.
Stefan.
In his Atwater bag. But Stefan is, his name is Steven.
Steven is one of our co-executive producer writers,
mm-hmm.
that's under Gwen, who you mentioned, Gwen Segan, our showrunner, yeah. Who he's wrote both your episodes.
Yeah. He wrote Miami and he wrote On the Way.
Yeah.
And you know, if he can finish some type of trilogy, if I can get one more up out of him, that'll be dope too.
So let me tell you something. Most of the crew, like, they read his episodes and they're like, it's not a feature. It's an episode. You see how big he goes.
Nah, he goes big.
You know what I mean?
He's been going big, and I really appreciate that. And so when you talk about these moments, I'm thoroughly enjoying my season 13 moments from Miami to now. To be honest with you, I know it can get any better than Miami. And then On the Way pulled up, and I was like, Jesus Christ, this can be something special, you know. And by the time Keisha Sharp, who was our fearless director in that
moment,
and the rest of the team got involved. You know what I want to do this time? You know, we do something very special on Wednesdays on set, right, where we celebrate somebody.
Oh, my God, yeah. Explain this, because people need to know that. Yeah.
So every hump day, we pick a different cast. No, not the cast member. Cast members actually can't be included. You got to go a crew.
Crew.
Somebody from the crew gets nominated to be celebrated for the day.
This is
behind the scenes. And you know, if you focus on time and getting out of there at a certain hour, you get aggravated, because we really do lean into the moments that it takes to celebrate these people. And it can be songs, it can be dances, it can be, you know, whatever it takes to help that person feel good in the moment. And it sporadically just happens throughout the day, all day on Wednesday. And so in reverence and respect to that, I wanted to take this episode, how the cast has now been like, yo, this is a Burgess episode. This is an Ocean episode. This is an Atwater episode. I really wanted to share this episode with departments that I felt like helped me the most. The first one that I wanted to share this episode with was wardrobe, because
they'll slap you. Call them costumes.
Costumes.
Well, I learned that.
Call them costumes. But I wanted to celebrate costumes.
Yeah.
For really just like leaning into the details of every moment. you know, I think Atwater was just, I was just extremely comfortable that whole time. Well, and not only that, but stunts. Because Ooh. Because the way that we had to pull up and pull off these Ponzi's with the cars.
Yeah.
And from the driving to, you know, just the energy of it all, man. Like, so, I thought that would be dope to say. In reflection and respect of what we do on set, I wanted to celebrate and share that episode with those departments because they treated me right.
I think what you're saying is extremely important. But the thing is, whoever was picked on the one Wednesday, the next Wednesday, they get to hand the crown.
Right.
And then in front of everybody, they make that announcement.
Yeah.
And you got 100 crew members saying, I wonder who's going to pick now. And then the person just lights up.
Yeah.
You know, because they're appreciated for the work that they did.
Uh-huh.
And like you said, what it does do, too, it's an energy booster.
Yeah.
As soon as you've seen that the woman or that kid working and they're walking in and, you know, hey, Frankie,
the whole crowd goes crazy. Everybody goes crazy, man. No, it's a beautiful thing.
See, these are the little things that I take for granted, not realizing because I'm in it. You know what I mean? I get to eat that good food every day. You know what I mean? Like that kind of crap.
You know, this was the incomparable Keisha Sharp directed on the way. Stephon wrote both of them.
Steven, yeah.
It's Steven.
Yeah,
but, you know, when he's in his bag like this, we got to call him Stephon.
All right, I'm going to go with Stephon.
But understand this. A script had never spoke to me as much as this one had because it had so many layers that hit me personally. Now, there's a character in the episode that's essentially the bad guy. Or the guy that essentially stole the Mustang.
Yeah.
His name is Duke. Duke was also the name of my pet duck that I had growing up in Harvey.
Oh, man. Remember, we talked about Duke.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's this line that Lolo, who becomes...
Lolo was the unwitting in this show.
Unwitting. That's the word I was looking for. I appreciate you.
We'll kick it into that. Yeah.
Yeah. Says this line that I've even written once upon a time as poetry. If you're not in the way, you're on the way.
There's two types
of people in this world, I've always said. People who are in the way, people who are on the way. And so when he gives me that line in the diner, the way it hits me is very... It helps you feel like, I think that's what helps the scenes in these moments because there were these
very comfortable. It's in your world.
Right. It's my world.
Yeah.
And so what I was connecting to was extremely serendipitous. So whatever light that you might have saw in that moment was real.
Yeah.
It was like, man, did this man just say what I thought he said? I think he did.
See, he researched, man. Like, so he's new this year, you know. So I believe it's this season he came on. So I go there to L.A. I do my thing in L.A. You know, I work with all the writers. And he started pitching things to me. And I'm like, is this guy out of his mind? Like that, like, there's an episode and then there's a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was big. But it was interesting. And I'm like, I don't know if we could do it. But that's not my job to tell you. I'm just telling you, as the police, okay, you want to do vehicular hijackings.
Mm-hmm.
You want to blow up a building downtown.
Mm-hmm.
This is how the police go at it. This is how we could do it. You know, and... the whole time in the back of my head, I'm thinking, we can't do this. You know what I mean? But we did it.
Man, we did it.
Yeah. Gwen pulled through. We did it. And we did it with you. You know?
Which felt extremely special. I'm like, dang.
Dude, I walk up to set.
Mustang?
Forget it. How about the Lambo? And we'll get into the Lambo.
The Lambo was crazy, too.
You know, when we spoke to Gwen... And in her podcast, she was so excited to talk about your arch this season. Not just about, you know, the little things, but like how you're so responsible and put yourself behind everyone. That you got to take care of the kids. You got to take care of the buildings. You got to take care of birds. You got to take care of roos. Oh, it's never about you. You know what I mean? And she wanted to really look into there and figure out what it actually was and what it's been like for you. You know what I mean? Like, as growing. And I was wondering, like, you think we're doing it right? You think she's hitting it?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I feel like we've grown into something. And I wouldn't be honest with you if I didn't say that we, from both sides, didn't experience growing pains.
Yeah.
You know, really trying to figure out figure out who Atwater is and what makes him tick and why he moves, how he moves. And it started, and I'm grateful for this blessing, it started with his father when we were able to introduce Lou.
You really that angry at me that you gonna put your own father back inside?
Angry? Are you serious? Do I look angry right now? I don't got time for that. I mean, I used to be. But I had to get that up a long time ago. I had to make peace with you not being here so I could take care of Jordan and Vanessa. So I chose to remember the man that was good. The man that raised me, the one who took me on the midnight walks. Remember that?
And that wasn't exactly what I imagined that Waters' father would be, but I think that's what I love about the challenge of collaboration.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And storytelling is where it's like naturally I can't help my natural references and my imagination of what I think some things should be.
Right.
But neither can the writer who wrote it for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then neither can the director. You know what I'm saying? Who's going to have their own perspective and approach. And it's very important for everybody to bring the stuff that adds the most value to the table. And the hard part sometimes is admitting that certain things that you think doesn't actually add value to the story. And that's what was tough for me as I was really, you know, grappling with these storylines a lot of times and like, why do I bump on this and why do I bump on that? And having, you know, uncomfortable conversations with Sarge about the script sometimes and being like, you know, I would love to bring life to this, but there's something about it that doesn't really feel comfortable.
You're not trusting the words. You're not trusting the story.
And then you finally figure it out. You finally get uncomfortable enough to where you're comfortable being uncomfortable.
Oh, wow.
Right? And that's what Eric LaSalle used to always say. And I don't talk to Eric LaSalle that much, not as much as you probably do or even Sarge.
Yeah.
But I don't have to because I hear his voice all of the time. All of the time I feel like I'm talking to him. Sometimes in moments when I'm on set or in moments when I'm digging into the dialogue, I hear Eric LaSalle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, I finally understand it. Or I can finally do it. You know what I mean? He used to ask me to do some things once upon a time that it was hard to say if I was capable of. And I know we told great stories, and I'm not ashamed nor am I disappointed in any of the work we've done. I think everything we've done has been the best we could do in that moment. But our moments are growing into better, in my humble opinion, better television because it's landing on me now.
Yeah, well, you know, we're meeting a new Atwater every year. Every year I need and I love them. You talk about being a fan. No, I'm in love with them. I love them. You know, they're my family. And you're right. You have a preconceived notion of who this individual is.
Mm-hmm.
And someone shows up and you go, this is Mookie? You know what I mean? Like, man, this ain't Lolo. This is Lolo? Like,
right.
You know, Lolo was white.
Yeah.
Right?
I
didn't think Lolo was white. Like, did you?
I did not. I didn't think Lolo was white. I didn't think KC was black. You know what I'm saying? It was a whole bunch of things that I didn't expect necessarily. But
Mindy, and we'll get into that.
Ooh, yeah.
I love Mindy.
Mindy was the sweetest. I love Smack, the brother that played Marcus.
You're talking about his character name was Mark, and we were at the car dealership.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the guy selling the car, who rebuilt the car with his dad for all that time.
Right.
And
put all that work in it, you know, and he's a voiceover actor most of the time. And offset, I was able to pick his brain just about the voice acting space. You know what I mean? And if I could brag about him, you know, he helped me understand, like, it was through voice acting that he's really been able to support himself, buy homes and help his family, things like that.
God bless him.
And this was one of his first pictures in front of the camera. Where, you know, people actually got to see the face behind the voice. And you gave him one of the best compliments. And I think he walked away from our set with confidence because you told him that that was one of the best deaths that you've seen.
Oh, my God. We got to talk about that.
You know,
I've never seen that in my life. I've seen in 250-plus episodes. Man, I feel like I'm talking over you. I'm just excited that you're here. You know what I mean? I feel goofy. In 250 episodes, I've seen people die. I see people try to die. I see people holding their breath. I seen the life come out of that kid. I had to walk in the alley because a person died in my arms. You know what I mean? When I was in the job. A couple people, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it was the same thing. And I wouldn't even know how to articulate that note. There's a last breath that leaves a human being.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a light, too. Mm-hmm. And that light is hard to explain. Mm-hmm. It goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're almost looking for somebody floating up in the sky. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God. But you're stuck there, and you got to give him that peace. And when he did that, to be honest with you, I couldn't keep watching it. Like, it was tearing me up. It was so real when he died.
Man.
Yeah. It was crazy. You know what it reminded me of? You know, out of this season so far, one of my favorite moments with you, and I'm going to ask you what one of your favorite moments was up to this was I'm going to throw a couple at you. Keep in mind, we did a lot of stuff. You know, we blew up some shit downtown.
Mm-hmm.
You carried a floppy-headed woman out of a building with her head flipped over.
Move on out. Evacuate the building. Evacuate the building. Everybody move out of here.
You remember that, man?
I remember that, boy.
Gas, fire, you couldn't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
We're going down hallways. The Bell House.
You searched the whole house yet?
No, sir.
I'm pretty sure we're going to find some more, Sarge. I seen a lot, but I ain't never seen nothing like this. This is...
Do you remember this scene?
I remember the scene.
I got to give you that one. Like, you brought up the dead guy, so I got to bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being outside the Bell House, and you're like, Luch, what do we do? We go through the technical end, you know, the gloves. This is what you got to do, and you're searching. But when you open up that wall, and you seen these people that you've been working for, because we knew there was a list of people, you know, missings, and now families could have closures, and these are... people that died a horrific death, you know, with this, the pain they went through. And we talked about that. We talked about thinking of all the people that lost some of it and never came home. And we took our time in that Bell House, in that mansion. Most of the time, we did more work off screen than we did on.
Mm-hmm.
And after I talked to you, you just looked at me and you walked away. And I was like, man, I hope I didn't fuck that up. You know what I mean? I hope I didn't screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
But then I knew I didn't, because when you walked outside, you said, watch this, Luch. And then you walked up to Voight, and it was just, he was talking to the commander outside, and we were doing a beautiful scene. Your face told 1,000 stories. Like, you will, I told you, these ghosts will stay with you.
Yeah.
They will haunt you. These souls will be with you. No one will know in 2 months when you wake up screaming, and you're a grown man, and you're looking in the mirror of the bathroom, and you're shaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's these people.
Not your call.
My officer is giving a statement right now. Like I said,
Sarge.
She was alone.
Sarge.
No one else on my team has a word to...
Wait. No, don't go in there until I have to be cleared.
What's going on, Kev?
I need you inside. You got to see this. I saw a bent wooden panel along these window seats. I'm thinking Bell's hiding drugs, weapons. I was wrong. We're gonna need the mobile crime lab to come in here and search this whole house, Sarge.
The conversations with you before moments like those, I find them to become extremely essential at this point. And it's because you never know what part you're gonna connect to. You know what I mean? And so that's why even when you feel like you might be rambling or you might be saying a lot, it's like, I think for us, it's important for us to hear it all, because everybody connects to different things. You know, you might not connect to the fact that this is your first body that you've found in Saran wrap in a wall.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That might not be what connects you. But what I know what connected me was when you told me that the job isn't done. Like, now the job actually starts, because now all the families that didn't know what happened to their loved ones.
And you fought for that. And that, I think that ended up in the movie where you said, Luch, what would I be doing? And afterwards in the bullpen, you weren't going home.
You know, we have that moment at the end with me and Sarge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where, you know, he tells me good work.
Pulled 3 more bodies out of the house. With Guard Jack and Bills facing 11 first-degree murders.
Yeah. How is it?
Fine. Talk to Med. Lawyered up. He's just fine.
It's good work. Get some rest.
I think that moment tells the story that, you know, Atwater is exploring the next page of, you know, but behind, okay, now that we got these bodies, now we still got work to do. We got to inform families. You know what I'm saying?
We have people that are, like, lost. We have people that are missing.
Yeah.
We have unidentified.
And so that's what I remember connecting to out of everything that you told me.
Oh, I love that.
In that moment. It was like, oh, okay. So let me hold on to that. And so that was actually what I was able to think about, you know, and Jesse.
Putting somebody's family to rest.
Right.
Finally.
Right. And I think earlier this season, it was Jesse Lee Soffer himself who taught us an important lesson about thinking.
Oh, God, I remember that.
And I remember it really hit you.
Yeah.
It stuck with you in a way that, you know, it became something that it's a tool that you use now with us.
Yeah.
And you always cite Jesse, you let us know where you got it. But that's the thing, you know, it's like, okay, what is it that I'm actually thinking about that might be, you know, I don't think it's right or wrong answers. I think some things are more effective than others. But what I'm learning in my experience, and this is what Erica Sal taught us, is we don't believe in what's right. We don't believe in what's wrong. We believe in what's real.
Yeah.
And so as long as we focus on what's real, and what was real for me was thinking about the fact that, damn, I got all these families that I have to inform.
So you were thinking the whole time.
Yeah.
You're right. Jesse Lee Soffer, it can't be easy being an actor coming back on a show where he acted and direct. But the way he gives a note was fabulous, you know?
Yeah.
And I sat there and I listened. And when he said that, you know, you got to always be thinking. Me and you, like, walked away. That's one of those moments.
Yep.
You know what I mean? What are you thinking about right now while you're acting? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It could be a starfish. It could be whatever it is. You got to be thinking about something.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just have the answer. Don't make it spontaneous. And you're right. That was a golden nugget.
It was a golden nugget.
Yeah.
I was able to give it to a couple officers yesterday. That were, you know, in that shootout moment.
Oh, cool.
At the end of the episode that we're doing now. And what I asked him to think about was just like, you know, y'all are two cops. What were y'all, you know, how many, have you ever shot anybody? Have you been in situations like this? Try to imagine where you're from and where you were on your way to before you decided to come here.
Yeah, getting tacos at 63rd Street.
And you know what I'm saying? And it can be that
simple. To have your daughter's party after this.
You know what I mean?
That may not come. Yeah.
And when you turn that corner, your job is to be the best police you can be. Just be good police. And that's what I told him to think about. I said, just think about being good police. You know what I mean? Like, eliminate the threat. You understand? You, like, take it all in.
Yeah.
You see what's going on. If you got to eliminate that threat, do it. You the one who got to go home tonight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but none of this is on the page. None of this is on the page.
Yeah.
None of this is on the page. And just go in there and do your best. Do your best to be good police. And I feel like they connected to that. And the more we shot, the more comfortable they got. I saw some amazing stuff yesterday. Just watching actors. You know, I didn't have that much to do in the scene. Mm-hmm. And so I was actually able to kind of help, you know, Angelo, some of the stunt guys. Like, it was a team effort. Everybody came in and really contributed to making sure that the integrity of the shot was positive from the cop perspective.
We got to take a quick break. But when we come back, LaRoyce and I get into the best parts of shooting last night's Chicago PD episode. It's called On the Way. So as we say on the show, hold down an anchor, because we'll be right back. And we're back, talking with Chicago PD's LaRoyce Hawkins, a.k.a. Kevin Atwater. You ready to dig into this episode 1311?
Let's go.
Because we talk so much about it. First of all, big shout out to director Keisha Sharp and the writer Steven, like we just said.
Mm-hmm.
The man, you know, he don't write episodes, he writes features. And what I gotta say that was so wonderful about Steven writing this was, you know, he's in LA, they're on LA time. So it's 2 hours difference.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, one ring and he's answering.
Yeah.
I'll be on set, hey bro, I got this problem, I gotta change this line, I gotta move this around. Are we cool with this? Yeah, Looch. I mean, at 5 a.m., he's rocking and rolling.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I would send him before there was a problem. You'd come up to me or something, and he'd say, do we really want to kill this guy? Can we kill that guy? Like, we were pivoting. You remember that with Keisha? Like, Keisha was rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of moving parts, especially at that auto place. And he answered. And you go, okay, episode, all right, I got my computer. Like, he might have been on a shitter. I don't know. Like, he was always ready.
He might have been
like brushing his teeth, washing his ass, and typing away at the hitting them keys. You know?
Nah, I share the same experience, man.
Because you called him, right?
Yeah. He was there for me. Every time I needed something, if I had a question or just wanted to unpack something with him, he was in the pocket.
Yeah. And he listened.
Yeah.
All right. So the guest stars we talked about, Lolo. Casper.
Yeah.
Casper, cool, right?
No, Casper was cool.
Duke.
Yeah.
Mindy. And most of the time, you wouldn't give a shout out to somebody like Mindy. So Mindy was the lady at the auto park place when you went to go buy that bullet car,
right?
The Steve McQueen bullet car.
Right.
There was just something special about that lady, right?
There was something special about that lady. And she was so excited to be there. You know what I mean?
Oh.
And I think it translated in the scene, you know, just her excitement. And you trust her.
You're going to get a hug.
You know, and she was about to give me a hug with that financing.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Do the paperwork.
Let the record show that paperwork was about to feel good. I was getting $2,500 off.
Yeah.
You know, they was probably about to overlook some things on my credit. You know, like Ms. Mindy was about to take care of me.
Yeah. And Gwen and Steven weave those words in there, like, can't let anything step into something you love.
Right.
You got to get this girl.
Right.
And they were talking about one of the greatest guest stars on this episode.
Miss Tasha Fox.
No. What was in Tasha Fox's belly?
Come on,
little
man.
Sip of water.
Relax. You know what, we're going to nickname him Bullet.
You going to call him Bullet? I love it.
You know what I'm saying? Because
of the car.
Yeah, because of the car, but also because I've been dodging bullets my whole career. Couldn't dodge that one.
Big shout out to our stunt coordinator, too, and I'm going to tell him why. Our stunt coordinator, just a down-to-earth, super cool dude, Tom Lowe.
Tom Lowe.
He's just like mellow as mellow could be, but he gets the job done. And then when you see his work, you see what's leaking out of him, like when he's having fun, you know. For this one, the writer wrote, he wanted to get a car that was the most iconic police car in the world. You know, to me, it was a little bit older. And you had a car, too. I think we talked about Shaft's car or something, right? Like, what would
you do? I remember Chad actually hit me up. And this is what's crazy. Chad didn't know that I'd already bought into the Bullet Green demonstration from the Steve McQueen movie.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, I always wanted the baby's nickname to be Bullet.
Oh, so you locked in on the Bullet for the name.
I locked in. So Chad called me, and he was like, you know, we're wondering if it might make more sense or if you connect to the car from Shaft.
Right.
Which I understood. I understood why. But had my imagination not already taken me to the Bullet, then I probably would have went with Shaft, because why wouldn't I connect with that a little bit more? You know what I'm saying? And I think culturally that's something unique and cool, you know, that we could play with. But
the story was nice, man.
He
wanted it to be sold to somebody, and here you are, a policeman coming in there. And all woven in there was like, you never take care of yourself. Like, they did this montage of you driving past it. Like, when would we have taken the time to do that? And you would just look like, man. And then finally, you got your ass out of the car, you know, and you walked up just to take a ride in it. You know, and kudos to Tom Lowe, because it was stick shift. That thing wasn't easy.
Yeah, nah. They gave me a shout out to Cheyenne.
Cheyenne did it.
Cheyenne's the Atwater stunt driver. And I'll never forget one day, I just got back in town, fresh off the plane. Me and Cheyenne met up in the parking lot, and he showed me how to get around in a stick shift. And it wasn't the Mustang that we used in the movie. It was, you know, just a stick shift that we had available. But it made me comfortable enough to feel like I can go in there and do my thing with the with that moment when we were pulling up.
And the reason why I'm giving Tom Lowe such a shout-out for this one is keep in mind, too, we did one of the biggest scenes in a long time in Chicago PD history. Buckingham Fountain.
Buckingham Fountain.
Dude, let me hear your perspective of that scene, and I'm going to jump into mine, man.
Man, you know how...
That's Hollywood.
No. I felt so special and extremely grateful the way that we shut down Lakeshore Drive at that time of night and created that kind of traffic. You know, like, nobody does that but Beyonce when she's at Soldier Field.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That was like Beyonce Soldier Field traffic that we created because we had Buckingham Fountain.
Yeah.
And Atwater had to have a moment. So that's something that I feel, you know, like that's a dream come true.
Can
like,
I set up the visual?
Set up the visual for me.
All right, so here's the visual. Hey, Looch, we're going to need you downtown. We're shooting at night. It ended up being a gorgeous day, right?
Yeah.
I said, okay, man, I'm going to go on a tech scout. I ain't missing this. So I pull up and I roll into Chicago policemen because they got too many of them out there because we got to shut down Chicago on Columbus by Buckingham Fountain, Michigan Avenue, Lakeshore Drive is affected, right?
Yeah.
So there's this guy who was the acting commander that night.
Mm-hmm.
He was a guy that I worked with, was a sergeant. He's such a good man.
Mm-hmm.
Like old school Chicago. Mm-hmm. He's now the acting commander of the 18th district, right?
Mm-hmm.
He comes out to say, man, what's going on? Like, this is big. They had all these cops out here that are going to block it. And a couple guys I worked with in intelligence, a couple guys I worked with in narcotics. And I was like, I didn't realize how big it really was. Next thing I know, the buses pull up. We got 200 extras out
200
there.
200 extras.
Yeah, dressed scantily. Right, right.
You heavy.
They got neon stuff going on. There's like, now I see Tom Lowe. Tom Lowe's down the street. And he's got these souped up little skidding cars all over them, floating cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're practicing with their brakes, and we shut down Columbus. And the light comes up, and out walks Keisha Sharp, probably one of the best dressed directors you ever seen in your life,
you
right?
Understand me?
Keisha Sharp got boots up to her knee, right?
Yep.
She got this leather matrix jacket on, right? She looks like Keanu, right? There's a light that hit her, and she's one of the sweetest, nicest ladies in the world. And she says, she looks over me, she goes, you ready, boo? You
know, yeah.
Call
yeah.
me boo.
And then got you excited,
got
didn't
me, you? Oh, dude, you just don't know. So here's Keisha standing in the middle of the street. We got the AD out there. We got Tom Lowe. And then you walked into it. You went and talked to Tom Lowe. You floated around. So I had Keisha and I had you, and I just stood back there and I went, man, it's one of the biggest scenes of the year. I was so proud of our show. Man. I was so proud of Chicago. I was so proud of something that was part of that the history of these cops that were out there watching us. And let me tell you something, that it was so real when we were doing it. Cars were spinning out, you know, mm-hmm. doing donuts, going back. It was we replicated a real takeover, which has been happening across all these cities. It was so real that the Chicago Police Department has a specialized unit that reports to scenes like this. Didn't know we were filming. Went across Buckingham Fountain in the park. You remember this?
Yeah.
And they jumped out with the strips.
Yeah.
That stop cars. They throw them underneath the wheels. I can't think what they are. And we're like, dude, we're filming a movie. You remember
that? I remember that, boy. They pulled out, and I felt like I was back in Harvey, and the Jump Out Boys was in the pocket. I was like, oh, snap. What's going on for real? But, no, it did feel so real.
Yeah.
That those cops had to, they had to pull up and see what was going on with us. And by the time they realized, you know, that we were Chicago PD, we shooting a movie. It was hilarious.
You know, and someone said, how did he not know? I said, listen, man, there's 13,500 coppers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the first district and the 18th district where it's your downtown.
Mm-hmm.
It's saturated with specialized units and people from everywhere. Not everyone's going to a roll call saying, hey, this is what we got going. That's what's going. They're out there working. You know, they're trying to prevent crime, save lives, do their job. But they're coming from all walks of the city. I remember them guys pulling up and then pulling away. And I said, well, we must be doing it right.
hey, we were doing something right, Looch.
Yeah.
We were doing something right.
Yeah.
But you got to understand, man, those – it's hard not to embrace those moments. That's why that team effort is so important. You can't do that scene without Esteban. Esteban, that's
Esteban's special effects.
Special effects, Esteban, just throwing the, you know, he responsible for the smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's like, it's those elements. You got to think about every single element involved. You got to think about how Louis put these lights together.
Yeah.
And how we had to be specific with even how we lit up the Buckingham Fountain. Like, we had, like, that was a collaboration between Louis and the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
To get those lights at a certain level for the fountain.
Two of the guys that worked there are friends of mine. You know, all the guys, the street, you know, they come over to the water department. I get a text. I'm like, man, I can't talk right now. I look down. It's a dear friend of mine.
Right.
And I look over. Man, he was checking to see if I'd answer his call. He runs the whole water department over there. You know,
you know what I'm saying?
He had to do.
And so that's a team effort. And we don't have that scene without the city. So, you know, the team effort just makes me feel like Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? In those moments, man.
It was badass. So the true crime of last night's episode was vehicular, you know, hijacking.
Yeah.
It's happening across America where it's sad. It's like young kids, you know, taking cars and stealing cars and going on joyrides and people getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
But this crew that you were working on, and what I loved about it is you really dove into this episode.
Mm-hmm.
You called me before, you called me after, you called me. Like, we really talked about it. Like, these guys killed three people from previous ones. And this was you going undercover as a cop.
Right.
And we always say, like, okay, LaRoyce, you're already playing Atwater, but now you got to play another guy, so you're three times removed.
Mm-hmm.
But you did your homework, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And you, the unwitting, it didn't pop up earlier, but it's in your head. You remember the unwitting.
Right.
So what an unwitting is in the police world that I've worked in is, you know, you got CIs, they're confidential informants. You got people that are cooperating defendants who work off a case.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got a guy who is an unwitting, which means he has no idea he's being played by the police.
Yeah.
He has no idea. Later, you're going to flip him, but he's the weakest case on that guy. You know what I mean? So he didn't pull the trigger. He just drove these guys to these vehicular carjackings.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, people died. They didn't go home. You sat down with him at a famous breakfast place downtown, basically mm-hmm. had pancakes with him.
Yeah.
You know? And to be honest with you, we talked about how this huge scene downtown. You know what one of my favorite scenes was? When you broke it to him that you were the police.
Oh, yeah.
You know? That was heartbreaking. He said you shared stories with me.
Right.
Can you tell me about that scene? You remember anything?
What I remember about it is feeling like, man, I wish I would have. There was a moment where I really could have let him know that I know him and called him his real name. If it was ever a moment for me to call him by his real name, which was Lawrence. Remember, his name was Lawrence Lolo Vaughn.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I would have called him
you
by...
You didn't tell me this. I love this.
But you know, I'm just thinking about... They were in my notes. I just forgot them in that moment. So it's like in that moment, when you show him that you're the police, when you let him know that you got a tracker on his car, you've been following him.
You give him his birth name.
And I'm gonna give you your birth name, Lawrence. And I need you to keep on helping till we bring in Duke. But that moment was my favorite moment about that, honestly, was trusting the words. Because I remember doing homework the night before and feeling like something didn't flow. And it was a moment where we were shooting Lolo's coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And you were there the whole time. And let the record show, when Luch is there, there's not just an energy, but a power, you know what I mean, that he has. He can veto vibes or vices as they pull up in the moment. And so Luch left right before my coverage. So the line that I got comfortable saying on Lolo's coverage, now since Luch isn't there, isn't okay.
Oh, man.
And I appreciate that moment. At first, I was mad at you, Luch. I was like, this man.
Well, dude, I wasn't going to the movies.
I know.
Working on I some know. Other shit.
I know that naturally. But it helped me because it forced me to trust the words.
Oh, nice.
And it was a little uncomfortable in that moment. I had to break out of the rhythm that I had established. But in my humble opinion, it made for a better scene because the words as they were, but more than enough, you know, I just had to, you know, I had to wrap my mind around them. And had you been there, I wouldn't have stretched myself to wrap my mind around something that I probably wouldn't have, you know what I mean? It wouldn't have been as dope.
Dude, this segues directly into something that was my favorite moment. I said I was talking about my favorite moment. And it's going to hit you when I say it. Every day we eat lunch in a place that we call the Motor Pool.
Yeah.
And we did a scene there called the Candy Shop.
Right.
But it wasn't a scene. I'm going to tell you the moment. The actor that we had was going through actor's block, if it's okay to say.
Yeah.
The words weren't hitting him. It was just this
big homie, Angelo.
Angelo, big, loving, awesome human being.
Good brother.
Good. He was having a problem. And you took him under his wing, so gentle, so beautiful. Just kept going over the lines, kept going over the lines. And, like, I was excited to go see this. You know, what the candy shop is in the Chicago Police Department is all the vehicles that are seized, like, in drug raids or, you know, they use drug money to buy it or they stole this and that. So we got Lambos in there. We got all this other stuff. And there's things that we use as the police as undercover when you want to play, like, a big dope dealer or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it was cool. So I was excited to go there. All that shit went to the side. When I seen this unselfish, incredible human being that was helping this other actor that was just there for the day, that had this special moment. But not just you, Taurus, and you're right, Keisha. Because Keisha was an actress, you know, still is an actress. And you three were the sweetest human beings, and it was killing that poor man. Dude, so I changed
work. He hit a storm. He hit a storm.
Yeah.
Which can happen to anybody.
Exactly.
Let the record show, it can happen to anybody. And my favorite part about his story, you know, he pulled up from New York.
Yeah, yeah, that accent.
He pulled up from New York to do that for that role specifically.
Right.
And he shared with me that his father, his late father, was an actor.
Wow.
And acting was something that he always wanted to try in reverence and honor of his father. And, you know, he had been trying to break into it, and this was one of his first roles, you know what I'm saying, where he was really able to kind of, like, lock in a certain way, and he just got a little nervous. It was the nerves of a bunch of stuff, you know, because it's nerve-wracking enough just to be on set, minus these emotional connections that you might have to the moment that you're trying to share.
Thinking about your dad, your pops.
You know what I'm saying? All of that. So, you know, he had just hit a storm, but the way he came through was beautiful. Yeah. The way he came through was beautiful. And when you see the final cut of that scene, you would never know.
You would never know. No one knows the behind-the-scenes shit that went into that. And the love and the respect and the heart. And, it you know, like, I was making my calls. I was changing lines. I pulled you to the side. What if we say this? What if we don't point at this car? I don't need to bulletproof this.
Yeah.
What about, you know what I mean? Then he's going to genuflect over here. So you jumped in and we ad-libbed some words.
Right.
And I was like, there's my guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were calling audibles, you know?
Yeah.
And you're right. You know, when you see it and when people watch it last night, would have no idea. But go back and watch it and just know that the love that went into it.
A lot of love went into that scene.
The thespians and the directors. And it just seems like, oh, we're going to go pick a car. It ain't.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many scenes like this in our world that people have no idea, you know, the heart of it. You know, like the work that went into it. To be there and to see the Lambo and see this and see that. That scene was a straight up bitch.
We were pulling off some seamless ruses in this episode. From the 5020, not the 5021, but when we have to, you know, when the code red comes in at Lakeshore Drive, when I get a code word, Miami.
Oh, yeah, Miami,
And then the police pull up, you know what I mean?
Officers are given a distress signal, which, like, they, you know, maybe they rub their hat or they get a code word.
Right.
And the code word was Miami.
Was Miami.
Burgess said, why don't you go with Miami?
And I love that moment.
Yeah.
Burgess's moments are so, they're flawless. And I watch Burgess put them together, and I appreciate Burgess so much because
I hate how good she is. She complimented that episode so much that it reminded me the back in the day B stories.
Yeah.
When I would watch you guys in uniform and remembered, these are cop stories we're telling. These are the hard ones. Yeah. These are the in progress calls. These are the go to the door and talk to the lady because a kid. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
Like, seriously.
The heart of it. And that's where you learned. And these guys that just got plucked out of the academy and came in have no idea what it is to wear the blue.
Mm-hmm.
Like you and her shared that.
Mm-hmm.
And she has the right to tell you, why don't we make it Miami?
Right.
And you walked out giving her that side-eyed, man. One-eyed cat in the fish food store. Looking at you, two sons of bitches.
She killed it.
But who came up with the word? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You really got to be in to the... It's Gwen. It's Gwen and Steve. And it's these people. They knew that Miami. You know what I mean, you son of a bitch?
Yeah. I think that's a testament to what happens when, you know, if you're intentional and allow a writer, and hopefully Stephen feels good about the Atwater assignments when he's giving them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can tell he enjoys them just by how well the scripts turn out. But at the same time, I think it's a testament to allowing a writer the elbow room. You know what I'm saying?
To speak it to you, though. Yeah,
To speak into a character or into a story. For so long, you know what I mean? You find those deep nuggets
where
you can use, you know what I'm saying, the title from the last episode as the code word for this episode. I'm interested in what's next.
You got to go undercover this episode. Was there anything special or fun from you? Because I feel like I did most of the talking. You know, I worked in OCD for years, so I could give you it. You know what I mean? That's easy.
What I liked about, you know, it was a question that I asked Gwen and Steven, and you were involved too, Chad. Like, you know, I consider y'all the powers that be. So remember, when I asked the powers that be, you know, what is our win for this episode? You know, like, what would be the win if there is one?
Right.
And one of the wins that Gwen reminded me of is that, you know, there's a certain pace to certain episodes, and the Atwater episodes are here to kind of break a pace for a minute. You know what I mean? And kind of refresh palates. And then we get back into being extra intimate and cerebral in the cases, things like that. And so I was given the green light in my undercover moments to add the appropriate amount of humor that our show allows.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And it was grounded. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I appreciated that challenge because... You know, I come from stand-up comedy, and anytime I get to, you know, utilize that timing, I'm grateful. You know what I mean? Because, you know, you want to use your chops. And there's certain chops you don't get to use all the time on Chicago PD. And so when I was given the green light in those undercover moments to own a humor and a love that was more grounded in love in the work,
right.
But it's okay to go there. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes I think I might have went too big, and I think the moments that landed are the moments that we have, and that's what I'm grateful for in these undercover moments where I was kind of really just able to be loose and really enjoy it, you know, and enjoy who the character was. Like, sometimes I think the golden handcuffs, which is the formula of the show, you know, don't allow us to really color outside the lines.
Mm-hmm.
At least they haven't historically. And so when I was given a little elbow room to color outside some lines, I was like, wow, it really allowed me to dig deeper into who the guy is because I wasn't restricted. My imagination just let him ride, and he felt pretty real.
I got a quick question for you. We got to jump into this shit, right?
Yes, sir.
Are you as excited as I am about Tasha's baby?
Why it got to be Tasha's baby?
Well, I'm just saying that. You know? That baby?
Nah, I actually am. I'm very excited to see.
You could be a father.
Yeah, that's wild. And that's what I've been trying to think about. Like, you know, the very next episode, and I asked Chad to, you know, like, keep me in the pocket. I was like, Chad, like, there's a difference between a guy that's solving crimes and saving lives and a guy that's solving crimes and saving lives and he's about to be a father soon.
Right.
And so, like, how do you... You know, and Chad is helping me, you know, navigate through the small things that I can think about that help. For example, and if in the next episode, hypothetically, there's a pedophile involved. Once upon a time, yeah, I mean, nobody loves pedophiles, but it's a different emotional connection to a pedophile or pedophilia textures when you have a kid on the way.
Right.
Or when you have a kid or when you're about to be a father, you have, you know what I mean? And so those are the adjustments that I've enjoyed trying to find and explore, because you know how our show is, we're not going to touch on it all the time.
Right.
It's really up to us as characters to hold on to those textures that they give us and see what happens. But now I'm very excited. But I'm also nervous.
Oh, you gotta be nervous.
I'm nervous, Looch. I ain't gonna hold you. Yeah. I'm more nervous. It's similar nerves to how you get, you know, I have a son, 8 years old, Roman John, and he was born in the middle of a scene.
Yeah, and you, those guys drove out to the hospital.
You know what I mean? And so it's like, I wonder how Atwater's baby will be born. Will he be born in the middle of a
crime scene?
Of a scene. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But also it's like the nature, similar to the nature of fatherhood in general. You know, there's a nature to being a father on crime shows where you hope everything works out. You know, I'm optimistic about everything working out.
Yeah.
And you know, it's hard to say. It's not that up to me, but it also, it's just like fatherhood. It's like, you don't know what you're going to get. It's not that up to me.
I remember when you told me, you know, I'm going to have a son.
Yeah.
And I'd seen the pictures of this beautiful little man growing up. You know, he's playing basketball. He's doing this. You know, being a copper, I have Billy, my son Billy's, James, Matt, yeah. Kate. I got four kids. You know, they're 30, 29, 25, and 18 now. And I look back, and I missed so much being the police. And the unit that you're in, you're going to miss it too.
Mm.
So when they said you're going to have a kid, I was like, oh, man, I already know the shit I want to tell. Like, I had an argument with a cop one time. I said, this guy's a dog, fuck. We got to work on this case, man. He's going home. And they're like, you'll understand later. I'm like, what do you mean I'll understand later? Like, there's 10 kilos up in the house. We ain't leaving. Like, we're on the clock. Like, we got to wait. He comes out. I got to see a judge. I got to do. Like, he doesn't care about that. He cares about the kids. And the very guy who I was like, I can't believe this guy's being a dog, he was right. He would leave. He would spend time with his family. He didn't miss those birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't miss those things. I did, because I put the job first.
Right.
And when they said, you're coming to have a baby, I just sat down. I went, oh, man, I got a whole book for this dude of the mistakes that I made that I can't get back. Like, I see my kids now, and I'm like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? What I gave for the show, I mean, for the city, and what you do now, like, your days are 12, 14 hours, right?
Yeah.
You can't see little man.
But imagine, and I appreciate you creating that connection, because it's an authentic reflection of how fatherhood actually feels for me sometimes. You know what I mean?
Mm, yeah, right now.
Yeah, like right now. You know what I'm saying? I miss some things. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I think at this point, it's important to embrace, and there's no wrong answers. It's really about what's real and what makes the most sense for the family. What makes more sense for my family is exactly, you know, how we getting down, where if I feel a little job first sometimes because of, you know, what the family needs and what the family legacy represents, it's like you really have to balance your time.
Let me tell you this. Mrs. Fox is going out on the street because she's not all the way pregnant yet. She isn't showing. So she's coming back to Chicago.
Right.
She took her leave absent. Now you got a female cop out there who you love, who knew everything.
And I saw the same shit happen to Burgess.
Yeah. So now she's driving to and from work. This is the woman that you love. Now you got to think about that. Do you want her to stay at home? Is that right to leave your lady at home? Like, are
man,
you kidding?
I want my lady to stay at home. Now, I ain't going to hold you, Luch.
Yeah, you better.
That's what Atwater wants.
But you can't do that to her. She wants to be out there. She wants to be the police. You're going to take away the very thing that you love because she's carrying your baby for 9 months?
Yeah, she got to relax.
No, you got to relax.
No.
You got to look into her POV.
I understand her POV.
Listen, she's carrying around a bullet.
Right.
She can't take a bullet.
She got a bullet in there.
We got a baby coming to Chicago, Petey. He's going to come out like I was picturing him. I was thinking, man, I want to be there. That thing's gonna come out with all wide eyed like a sugar glider. You know,
like a sugar glider.
You're gonna have this beautiful little baby coming out, little water, and I'm thinking, what do I call him? I'm gonna call him Sip. You know, a little water.
Sip of water.
You know, Sip. Like you take a sip of water. Like your niece is little water. I'm like,
right.
The smallest I can't call him Drip. Maybe I could call that little fucker Drip.
Hilarious, man.
Here we are. You met this girl. You're finally thinking about yourself. You finally made that text.
Mm-hmm.
You got a baby.
You know what the text said? It took me a while to write it, but what I was, you know, I was trying to conceptualize how I would get her to come back. You know, Atwater can be a little poetic sometimes.
So this ain't written from them. This is written from you.
Right. And so what took me so long with the text was really trying to get my words together. And so what I wrote was something like this. From the heart to the first responder. If you ask me what I want and what I really need, 390, full speed, bullet green. I just want to feel the power of my own dreams. Is there a manual for meeting moments? My issue is I miss the way you saw things, like a soft kiss. You sure can make a vision visible and hard to miss. Pardon my tardiness, but hurry up and take your time. Because you started it. From the heart to the first responder.
Drop the mic. That was it, baby. That was Atwater and Lucci, Leroyce Hawkins, kicking it here in the official One Chicago podcast. And I gotta say, we never went out better than this. That's a wrap.
They're gonna have to leave us alone, Lucci.
That's my guy, Leroyce Hawkins. A smooth talker, fantastic actor, and just an all-around great guy to hang out with. See what happens next with him and his little baby bullet, or as I like to call it, sip of water, every Wednesday night on Chicago PD. And check out all the One Chicago shows. You don't want to miss a thing. One Chicago airs on Wednesday night at 8, 7 Central on NBC. And you can stream it on Peacock. The One Chicago podcast is a production of Wolf Entertainment and USG Audio. The series is hosted by me, Brian Lucci. It's executive produced by Dick Wolf, Elliot Wolf, and Stephen Michael at Wolf Entertainment, Josh Block at USG Audio, and Janielle Kastner at Spoke Media. Our showrunner is Derek John. Our producer is Maggie DeBreezy. And our audio producer is Jason Mark. Video production by Bo Delmore. Coordinating production by Tess Ryan. Our production assistant is Montserrat Rodriguez. With engineering and mix by Evan Arnett. And original music by John O'Hara. This series is produced by Spoke Media and distributed by Realm. Production support for USG Audio by Josh LaLongi. I'm Brian Luch. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all soon.